Hi there, Craig Wilkinson, and welcome to another episode of Dangerous But Good. I'm enormously excited about my guest today. Conrad Cooper is probably South Africa's leading expert on overcoming addiction. And so really the topic of today is overcoming addiction. And addiction means many more things than what you think it does. So sure. Conrad, welcome.
Great
to have
really,
you.
Really nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate your time and your expertise. Yeah. I mean, how many people have been set free over the years through your intervention and your team's intervention? And
I think just the one counts, yeah?
Just the one counts, yeah. Don't be modest here, brother.
Yeah. It's been good. It's been an amazing journey.
But it's all about setting people free. Yeah. And addiction is one of the biggest issues that faces humanity today, isn't it? Men and women. Sure. It's a major. And I mean, we started talking about what does addiction mean? What is it actually? You know, when you think of addiction, you think of a guy spiking up with heroin or nyopi, but it's a lot deeper than that, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah. I think, I mean, if one closes one's eyes and thinks of the word addiction, what does it bring to mind? What is the picture that jumps to mind? And more often than not, Craig, it's the guys using on the street. It's broken homes, perhaps fatherless homes or parents, you know, not non-parent led, child led homes. But we don't actually look at the scope of it. That is just perhaps a stigma and a slight sort of tip of the iceberg, as it were, in terms of like the gravity of substance use. And substance use is not just the key at all, but it's about pornography, about gaming, about gambling, about, it's a behavior disorder at the heart of it.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, even something like eating can be an addiction.
Sure. Yeah. Again, the behavior disorder, if it's destructive in your material operational and how you operate and how you think and how you act and how you behave and creates a level of dependency, of course, sure.
Right. So, I mean, if you really had to explore this definition of addiction, you know, because what I'm interested in is most people do have probably some element of it. It's not a drug, it's not a substance, maybe not alcohol, but it's a behavior that you're kind of stuck on. That's very difficult to get out of. That's less than constructive in your life. So it's a destructive behavior that you kind of can't get rid of. Would that be a sort of very loose, fair definition of it?
It's a very fair and broad one. I think when you say it like impacts pretty much everybody, there's a couple of ways to look at that and break that down. There's an old saying that for every one person in active addiction, 64 people are negatively impacted.
So when you look at the domino effect.
Correct. Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about it from like a family perspective, the family immediately affected. The husband going to work is immediately affected and those around him are impacted.
Right.
Medical impacts, the story just rolls on that point. So the figures are frightening in terms of treatment and accessibility to treatment and how far that stretches. Yeah.
But would you say that lack of awareness of the fact that I do have some form of addiction and a denial is a massive, massive issue? So, for instance, the person who is, I mean, look, you're the expert. I'm just saying, you know, who's addicted to eating, who becomes obese. It impacts every aspect of his life, his family's life, his health. But he might think, well, you know, I don't take drugs, I don't drink, I'm okay, you know. And I think a lot of us might be in that situation where there is a destructive behavior in our lives that is affecting other people as well as ourselves.
Sure.
But we wouldn't ever categorize ourselves as being an addict of any sort. Is that accurate to say?
I think if you look at the word addict, the misnomer that it creates and the picture that it brings to mind is that we really need to break that stigma. It's not a commonly used word from a medical perspective, and way too commonly used in terms of a rehabilitation kind of treatment environment.
Yeah.
And the reality is actually it's a behavior disorder. So if you look at a disordered behavior and you start looking at that behavior stuff, if I'm smoking crack cocaine or there's a eating disorder process that now has impacted a person's life, or whether it's amount of screen time.
Right.
You checked your screen time recently and just checked how much you're on the
screen. I know. It's crazy.
That kind of space is really, really important.
Yeah.
So when you start engaging at that kind of level, we understand that it reaches far and wide.
Yes.
And if you look at it from an iceberg kind of principle, it's easier to understand and more relatable.
Yes.
That 10% is the disordered behavior that sits on top of the iceberg.
And that's what you can see.
That's what you can see above the waterline.
But there's 90% you don't see.
Correct.
Right.
And that 90% sustains the disordered behavior.
Right.
And the disordered behavior may be the stealing, it may be the absenteeism from work, it might be the domestic violence, it might be the sexual violence that takes place. It may be that if you're watching porn at that kind of level that you are impotent and not able to perform, and there's damage that happens from that kind of level.
Yeah.
So we're assessing the 10%, and if we say, hey, you're an addict, you know, do you qualify to be in that space or not? Go figure. Look at the 10% of the behavior and see what is sustaining that.
Right.
And if you're going to get into treatment, that's what you're needing to look at.
Yeah.
It's quite easy to stop using. It's about how do you move
fix,
from like
fix the underlying drivers. I want to jump into the underlying Go drivers now, but I mean, I think before I do that, I just really want to get a picture of the scope and breadth of the type of addictions that we can have. I mean, drugs is obvious. Alcohol is obvious. I mean, gambling is an obvious one. Sure. Sex addiction has become a big thing, and pornography, you know, but and eating. But, you know, those are maybe the big five. Mm. But you mentioned screen time. What other behavioral kind of disorders are that if you do a little bit of it, it's fine, but it can actually become destructive. Screen time, what else would you add to that?
I'd probably jump back again a little bit, Craig. Yeah. If you look at our South Africa, our beloved country, and we look at alcohol, we've got over twice the international norm of alcohol abuse.
So that's huge.
If you look at the kind of like around Kimberley area, 80% of domestic violence cases are alcohol related.
Right.
So you start bringing it out of the stats and into kind of real life situations and start to understand what that looks like.
So alcohol is one I didn't put in that big five.
Correct. So I mean, those are the kind of challenges that the guys face. You know, is it normalized? Is it like approved behavior? Yes. Is everybody drinking? Is everybody using it? And everybody can be using pornography.
Yes.
So, you know, in the schools, for example, some of the work that we've done, we found that in some situations that over 100% of the students are using pornography.
It's astonishing.
So that happens in school, outside of school. It's a sexual educator that then leads into domestic violence and gender-based violence, et cetera, et cetera. Not the school kids necessarily, but I'm saying that when there's that kind of level of normalization of use.
It's a gateway drug in a way, isn't it?
I mean, it starts in a way. I mean, we sort of move away from kind of the gateway drug because actually it's circumstantial.
Right.
So for example, the figures that look in terms of addiction treatment, rehabilitation, inpatient treatment, about 60% of folk that get in there, there's a sexual abuse history.
Wow.
So therefore,
are the underlying drivers.
You've got to track it back
to where did this start?
Sure. I mean, like, you know, that way, you know, that point, gateway drug is an irrelevant term.
Yeah.
It's like, actually, like, guys, what's happened?
Yeah, he would have found something.
Yeah, what happened to you?
Correct. But, you know, I think, Conrad, the other important point is that some of these addictions are actually socially acceptable. You know, I mean, watching pornography. How many guys say, I watch porn, you watch? I mean, it's almost like it's an okay thing to do. Drinking is very socially acceptable. You know, how many guys every weekend get smashed out of their minds? And it's kind of considered funny, you know? So socially acceptable things can become incredibly destructive behavior.
Yeah.
I mean, things like reels. I mean, I had to reel myself into you recently because I felt, you know, it's so—
Half an hour later, you should have, what am I doing here?
You know, I mean, and it's not that it's bad stuff. It's fascinating stuff. Yeah, it's interesting. It's intriguing.
Especially if it's about cars and this weekend.
Exactly. I mean, you can get lost for 2 hours in watching little reels, and that's an addiction. I find I had to break it because it's destructive in the sense it takes you away from more important things, you know, spending time with your wife. So, I mean, that's the broad scope of destructive behavior. But I love what you're saying. It's not necessarily the behavior. The behavior is the symptom of some underlying issue, that 90% of what's driving. So what are some of the key drivers of addictive behavior?
It's a difficult question to answer in that space.
Yes.
So, you know, at a broader level, what are the drivers? What does it consist of? Peer pressure, for sure.
Right.
You know, broken family systems, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, being caught up in that space and being either molested or taking part in something of that nature. Feelings of inferiority, not belonging.
Right.
Okay. The heightened anxiety that the younger generation, of those guys who are 18 to like 26 being what the highest level of anxiety ever recorded, pushes it into that space.
Right.
They're looking for ways out. They're looking for sense of belonging. They're looking for those kind of areas. So, you know, there's good writing to say, you know, the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connection.
I read that,
but actually that's also very strongly a driver.
Yes.
So it's a double-edged sword.
I'll do what you do because I need to belong to the gang. We see it in the Cape Flats with gangster members. People join gangs to be part of a belonging, part of a family, and they do horrendous things which they would never normally do to be part of their belonging. So
So all of those factors come into play. At the end of the day, we can really get spend many hours in discussion around a disease concept or whether it's not a disease concept or was it a trauma-based response or what those areas were. But the reality of the guys coming into treatment, to unpack all of that is years worth of work.
Right.
And the time's not available. The funds are not available to be able to do it.
Yeah.
So as a net result, you're finding around about 90% of people who need treatment are unable to access it.
Right.
The figures are staggering.
Yes.
Yeah. So the reality is, how do you create a situation that people can get into recovery, into the healing journey, stop using?
Yes.
Yeah. Get into a point
whatever
of
the particular using
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you know, sobriety becomes a critical component.
Right.
But unless there's radical change and radical development, it's not going to equal recovery.
I'm with you.
Because recovery is restoration to original purpose. It's purpose driven. Right. It's life giving. It's fullness. Yeah. It's good fun. It's about being able to engage. It's you know, having restoration of families, restoration of employment, restoration. Yeah. Of that space.
Yeah.
So that kind of like stopping point that sometimes therapy, looking backwards in that area, can be challenging to get to the inverted commas.
Because there's so much in the average person's life that led them to that point.
Correct.
So,
and, I mean, and they become combined.
Yeah.
It becomes a challenge.
Yeah.
So often that kind of root causes is something that for us is challenging in terms of delivering outpatient treatment and even inpatient treatment.
Right.
To be able to really get to the causation is a challenge. Yeah.
So essentially it's the life journey from a young age to where you are now, where you're looking for an anesthetic. You're looking to something that's going to ease the pain, make you feel better about yourself, give you a sense of belonging, a sense of purpose. You know, it's a way of filling, it's a way of healing a wound. I mean, they talk about the self-medication. I mean, in many ways, addiction would be that, wouldn't it?
I think that term is often spoken of being self-medicated in the process may be correct. The reality is that I'm not aware of it.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not aware that I'm healing myself or trying to heal myself or take medication to soothe trauma or aware of the trauma even. Yes. Yeah?
Yeah.
So it becomes like the behavior is outward looking.
Yeah.
And that's why the question starts off like, you know, what happened to you?
Yeah. What happened to you?
What happened to you? You know, and to really see the guys and say like, actually, what happened?
And sometimes it's not a major incident, is it? Sometimes it's just the surroundings, the fact that maybe the dad was never around when he needed discipline or was never there at the soccer match to watch him. He felt like a sense of abandonment, or there's a performance-driven element in the family unless you get good marks on your report card.
Yeah.
So there's a sense of inadequacy, sense of – and I mean, Conrad, it's fascinating. Every single one of us grows up with wounds.
Sure.
None of us were perfectly parented. So that whole life story goes in towards the point of what am I doing now to make myself feel better.
If we can jump into the life story a little bit, but before we go there, also as South Africa, we have a collective trauma.
Correct.
Through apartheid, through you know the narratives of what has happened in our country.
Yeah.
You know, we have a collective trauma.
Correct.
So really we're starting behind the mark.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
And those kind of things we sometimes don't understand the depth of them or the healing or lack of healing that takes place in that area. And that's why the kind of like pivotal point of any kind of treatment plan is that narrative of a life story to be able to really get it to measure of where it's at. So recovery requires work.
Yes.
Very definitely. So when you talk about the stats and the process around it, just to throw some out there, you know, 1 trillion rand in the year 2024 was spent on gambling.
1 trillion.
1 trillion.
That's shocking.
So 1 trillion people invested in giving their money away.
And many of those people couldn't afford it.
Correct. Mm. So you look at that. You look at from a mental health perspective, 99.3% of people who need psychiatric intervention are unable to access it.
Sure. 99.3.
Correct.
So less than 1% can.
Correct.
Are those 99% aware of the fact that they do need that treatment?
A large portion.
Yeah.
A large portion, sure. Maybe they haven't identified, maybe they haven't named it, maybe it hasn't been diagnosed.
Correct.
But certainly.
But they're aware that something's wrong. Like, I'm not functioning at the level I should.
Sure.
Yeah.
Start looking at pornography.
Yeah.
Figures are shift around, but the kind of like accepted figures, 67% of men between the ages of 18 and 35 watch porn on a regular basis.
Regular.
At least monthly.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And the figure for women sits at about 63%.
Really? So not far off.
Yeah. So if you look from a sexual education perspective, which is what often is happening, that normalized violence in the behavioral process, which you get in pornography at a high, high level, they are being reenacted. The same thing applies to a young lady who's been exposed to it. So you as a father, you know, you got to be looking at what's happening and remembering that those people that are on those films, on the videos, on those kind of areas are also children.
Yes.
They're also children of a father, of a mother, of the process around that.
And there's an element of brokenness in them as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that's how also that happens.
Right.
So the trafficking that takes place and that, the abuse that takes place in that. So theoretically,
when
you say porn's like a victimless crime,
it's not.
Actually, every time that you click into that space, you're contributing to trafficking, to sexual abuse, to rape.
Yeah.
And the kind of damage that happens during that filming we've witnessed, and the kind of damage is horrific. There are doctors on scene to sew up people and things like that.
I mean,
it's a shattering break. So it's not a victimless. And one of the guys that we work with, and he got it right in terms of his recovery journey. And I was like, you know, like what happened, man? What was the thing that changed you? He said, the one day I saw her eyes.
The eyes of the actor.
The eyes of the actress. So the substance abuse is just unbelievable. And we work with trafficked guys, coming off the streets who have been trafficked in prostitution and brothels. Yeah. And, you know, the substance abuse is of course, rampant within that.
Because they need to do that to survive, because what's happening is just so horrendous.
Sure. So we need to look at that. If you look at the way that gaming is structured, and if you look at the way that the screen time is structured, it's structured to create addictive behavior patterns, dependency-producing behavior patterns. Yeah. And there's a really good test. Mm. You know, if you're out there, if you've got kids and you're wondering if you've got a problem, take their cell phone away for 2 or 3 days and see what happens.
The reaction is extreme.
It's withdrawal.
Yeah.
It's a withdrawal process.
It is, yeah.
So in Korea, where they do a lot of speciality treatment in terms of internet dependency and also gaming and those kind of areas, they've got treatment centers that specialize in this particular area.
Yeah.
And the detox is a really robust period. It's like 3 months, no access.
to rewire the brain and get rid of all the... Correct. So, Corey, I mean, before, we could talk for hours and hours, and I hope we do. The goal of getting free from addiction is to be whole as a human being. Sure. And to be whole means that you are healthy, that there's nothing in your life that you have to do, otherwise you don't feel okay. There's no need for anesthetics. You're able to love
That's good.
You're able to love freely. You're able to sleep well. You're able to live healthily. You're able to switch off your cell phone and not feel any. You can do it for days. You don't have any need whatsoever to watch pornography. You don't have to drink. There's no drugs in your life.
Sure.
You're eating at a decent, healthy level. Your sex life with your wife is healthy. I mean, this is kind of what a healthy person would look like who isn't addicted in any way. And I mean, it's quite rare, isn't it? You know, and we could say that the goal of this whole process is to get whole. And we're all on a journey to wholeness, which means we need to deal with all of the stuff that led us to where we are and look at all the things that we're doing that are less than constructive, that we need, that are dependencies. I mean,
it's quite a daunting task.
It's a daunting task, you know, it's a noble task, isn't it? I mean, it's a wonderful vision to have for everyone in life. Let's get whole and let's go on a journey to wholeness.
Craig, you know, the reality sits like this for me. You know, addiction wasn't our life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Recovery needs to be.
Yes.
So I'm not Conrad the addict.
Yes.
You know, my name's Conrad. I'm grateful to be in recovery, a restorative, regenerative purpose and life-giving directional pathway.
Yeah.
My usage of substance and related disorders, pornography, etc., you know, was a very small piece of who I am.
Yes.
I'm a father.
Yes.
You know, I'm a brother.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a sister. I'm a parent. I'm an uncle. You know, I'm an employer.
Yes.
I'm a ministry leader.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I've got a sense of humor.
Yeah.
I'm engaged. Yeah. I'm hardworking. I'm diligent.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. I love and I laugh and I'm like, I enjoy what I do and I'm passionate. And that dependency part is not what defines us.
No. In fact, it fights against all of the things you've
correct.
Done.
It robs all of those kind of processes.
Yeah.
So that journey into the transition of recovery is like a critical component because it should be vision orientated initially.
As to who I really am.
And who I want to be.
And who I want to be. And who God made me to be. And what would that look like if I'm totally free? Yeah. I mean, I love that. That's the vision, isn't it?
Sure. So, I mean, consequences never stopped anybody. Well, didn't stop me from using.
Yes.
That's for sure. You know, when you got to the point of like relapsing or using, it's like, gosh, when I've gone so far, let me just rather go the whole way.
Well, the wound is greater than the consequence, isn't it?
No doubt. Need.
Conrad, I'd love to hear just briefly your journey. Because, I mean, you've had an incredible journey.
Sure.
Through hell and back and to a point now where you're helping other people get out of their personal health. Give us a quick synopsis if you don't mind.
That's a quick one takes about a day and a half. getting on in the years. I think, I think what I'm saying is that recovery is our right.
Yes.
Yeah, it's our inheritance.
And responsibility.
And it's our creation and our responsibility. Yes. I mean, Galatians 5:1 is so cool in that. Yeah. Freedom's sake, I've been set free, but my responsibility
to remain free.
Yeah. And in that space, there's humor, there's community, there's belonging, there's restoration, there's work, there's fulfillment. Yeah?
Yeah.
Not all the consequences removed, but it is a matter of like making that choice
an
irrevocable one and building it forward. Relapse does not have to be part of the process.
No.
I buried my sister during one of those, and that's not a great kind of like space to be. So, I mean, to give you a high-level snapshot, I couldn't, he can, so I did. it's a process, Craig. I mean, my life, in hindsight, I've looked back at it, and I've wondered, you know, why it has been the way it is. I mean, I was caught in active addiction for like 22 years.
Right.
And by God's grace, on the 20th of January this year, I'm 25 years in recovery.
Fantastic. So, can I just give you a high five for that? I mean, that's an inspiration. Well done.
My folks were told, the treatment center I first went into, I used a couple of times in the treatment center. Like things got bad afterwards. I got shot. Like, I mean, everybody's got their war stories,
yeah?
And the war stories of mine were particularly bad. The molestation in hindsight, changed the entire direction of my life in terms of belonging, of engagement and work ethic. I mean, it drove me to, you know, to be, you know, what I did.
Well, what age were you when that?
The first one happened when I was about 5, and then about 7, and then again at about 13 was a really bad one. So yeah, I mean, and that just got closed up.
Right,
never any processing ability to do that or to work with it. I mean, I know there's a lot of guys out there that can relate to this, Craig. You know, if we look back into trauma and we start doing some good therapeutic kind of intervention in that space and recovery coaching in that area, we know that first 12, 14 years, a lot of stuff happens.
Right.
And often when you have an individual who's really battling, we can track it back into that space.
Yes.
You know, and that's also like, you know, father to the fatherless or having a child-led household or those kind of areas.
Yes,
like,
yes.
Well, how do you build well?
Right.
I mean, my mom and dad were great. There's a whole lot of story of where to start
sure
in the
5-minute
run. But yeah, that really sort of like took me off course. I think the fact that I was conscripted to the military, you know, that we understand, you know, from an apartheid perspective, the damage that was done to our country. But likewise, the guys that went into
the individuals.
I rebelled strongly. I was on AWOL and running drugs into the camp and doing all of those kind of things as well. But it's 2 years that, you know, that one rampages. And is controlled and managed and like reconditioned in the way that you should think or behave. And it's quite a thing to like reorientate and to like actually look at the reality of what life is and what the responsibility of the European man is in this kind of situation.
Yeah. Trauma.
How to readdress those wrongs.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, those kind of things come into play as well with it. But, yeah, I mean, I worked well, but I used and partied well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, I was national sales director of Hyundai Motor Distributor, opened up dealerships, and like my demise came, you know, progressively into that space. And yeah, I ended up pretty much on the streets with crack, with nothing left.
Was that your main thing, crack?
It started. Yeah, I mean, there's a whole journey that went into that, but I think that was the one that I looked at the guys using. I'd been through some terrible relational stuff. My relationship choices were really impacted negatively by the early childhood abuse. But, I looked at these guys and like, you can't live longer than 6 months, but I've got enough assets left to like get through that level. But I didn't die.
Yeah.
You know, and then it got bad. I mean, then it got onto the streets of Hillbrow and robbing the guys. And I got shot point blank range in a stupid kind of situation. Like, you know, when you got like that no fear, like I want to die kind of space.
Yes, death wish.
I tried to commit suicide to no avail.
And
it got really, really bad. And then... Yeah, on the 2nd of January 2000, I was crying out. It was, you've gone through that Y2K2 situation. I had nothing left, you know, from V8 boats and a house that I had to be brought down to like, you know, literally the clothes on my back, supported by my family who were away at the time. And, crack house in Weinberg, you know, TVs all wired into the rooms. And I turned the TV on and Ray McCauley was preaching.
Yeah.
And I felt compelled, like a deep compelling.
Yes.
Showered, went downstairs, hitched the car. First car stopped on Ubusa Sunday morning in Weinberg. Yeah. Not many people are, you know, crazy enough to stop at that point in time. And I got in and I said, like, where are you going? I said, guess church. And they said, well, we're going to church. I told them my sob story. They gave me money. So by the time we got to Ravonia Road, I'm like, I'm out of here, guys. Yeah. I'm coming back to Hillbrow. Yeah. And as I got out of the car, another vehicle stopped unbidden. And they said, hey, man, don't you want to come to church?
Wow.
So I said, where are you going? He said, Rema. So, you know, God played that story out and,
That's a real rescue, divine rescue, isn't it?
So I gave my life that day and went back to Hillbrow and carried on using for the next 18 days. But, I mean, things changed radically, huh?
Wow.
Doors got slammed. I got arrested. I mean, it was really dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And then, 20th of January into Nopwood.
Mm-hmm. The infamous
Nopwood. We had a couple of like well-known characters at that point in time.
Yeah.
And, I left there. Had a bit of run-in with the guys and like drew a line in terms of like what ethics I stand for. And when I drove on the back of the bucky away, God put a picture in my head and a voice in my head and said like, I need to open a rehabilitation center and put a picture of it. And a year later, borrowed 15,000 rand from my folks and rented a property and started a treatment center. And a year later than that, my sister died that year. And a year later than that, walked onto the property of that picture and that birthed the treatment facility. And
Connor, there was no turning back from that time at Nopwood.
Yeah, it was hard, man. That first year was ridiculously hard.
Were you there for a year, Nopwood?
No. I was in and out of Nopwood rather rapidly.
Right, right.
that's another whole story. That's another whole story, yeah. But, you know, that's how it started off. And we ended up, you know, ended up serving on the Central Drug Authority for a period of 6 years, the Minister of Social Development.
Fantastic. And, what a lovely story.
Yeah, on the executive committee and chairperson of the communication portfolio and various boards, etc. And, yeah, we got frustrated with the way treatment was being done, frankly.
Yes.
You know, the success rates that are bandied about are simply, I mean, you wouldn't start a business at that kind of level.
No,
it's like crazy. There has to be a better way. There's not a revolving door kind of system. So we developed multiple programs down there, from like crack cocaine specialties and crystal meth and like Wunga and eating disorders and, you know, pornography and sexual abuse and sexual offenders. Yeah. And we had a multitude of programs that ran as long-term treatment. 2017, it got to the point so that father said to me, like, time to go after the one.
Right.
Project Exodus.
Yes.
And that's how we birthed Project Exodus, which is like a whole outpatient program and resources, et cetera. So that's a snapshot. Yeah.
Brilliant. No, look, I mean, thank you. It's a phenomenally triumphant story to hell and back, literally, through the gates of hell and near death so many times.
Yeah, well, there's some seriously dark days. And I know that every breath I take, I owe to God. Without that, there's no doubt.
Oh, that's phenomenal. Yeah. Phenomenal. I mean, we have a mutual friend, we won't say a name, whose life was pretty much over through addiction. And
I'm sure he'd be happy for his name to be
mentioned,
actually.
Yeah, hey, Abner Marie. Yeah, good mate. I mean, I go back with him a long way, prior to him ever becoming addicted.
Yeah, amazing man of God.
He nearly died many, many, many times. In fact, went to a hotel with multiple bottles of whiskey with the intention of never coming out. And through the rehab center that you ran at the point at the time. So, came right. And now he's completely free for many, many years. So, I mean, I've seen the success and it's wonderful. But, and I mean,
the restoration stories are just simply incredible, man.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, people need to take hope. Right?
This
revolving door process of treatment, people need to take hope.
Yeah.
You know, when you start treatment, not talking about like the consequences, which we know, that's how we got there. That's how we entered the door, and we start talking about vision.
Yes.
And we start talking about declarations and how to structure a program format and how to speak life.
Fantastic.
And how to engage in development of emotional intelligence. Yeah. And that's what makes a difference. It's time for
awesome. You know, I just want to summarize where we're up to, directly, because I think this is so important.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about addiction, and addiction is not always what we think it is. Addiction is a broad-ranging thing. It's behavior that's destructive to your life and ultimately to others. And of course, the extreme is crack, cocaine, heroin. I mean, those are the ones we think about.
I thought pornography was the extreme and gambling.
I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to that. But pornography, gambling, huge. Alcohol, huge. Yeah. Many socially acceptable. Working too hard, escaping into any behavior that is ultimately destructive, even if a little bit of that behavior is screen time, reels. You know, these are all. And the goal of our lives is to be whole and free, to be not addicted to any substance, any screen time, any pornography, anything, to be whole and to be free. That's the goal. And that's what we are designed to be. But we look at our story, our life story, from childhood to where we are now, and what wounds we've developed over the years to bring us to the point where we are. And what are we looking to for anesthetics, for ways to belong, ways to feel powerful, ways to dull the pain. And we need to look at how do we get out of that. And there's hope. And every one of us needs to be on a journey of recovery from things that we do that are less than constructive, so that we're being whole and free, so that we can be the greatest impact for good on the world. Conrad, I want to delve a little bit into pornography, because I think probably
that's a good idea. It might impact your marriage and various other things.
I'm not going to Google it. No, but, okay. but thanks for that correction. But it's probably the one that is almost most prolific, apart from screen time, but pornography is a lot more dangerous than that, a lot more destructive. Let's just come straight out and say pornography is an incredibly destructive thing, no matter how you look at it. It's wrong, it's bad, it's destructive, it destroys individuals, it destroys marriages, the whole industry is completely broken and ruinous and destroys people and links to, so I mean, let's start off just by calling pornography what it is.
I think the reality of pornography and just to actually, as you say, call it like it is.
Yeah.
It is slavery.
Yeah.
For the guys that are in there.
Slavery.
Absolutely beyond any shadow of a doubt. Yeah. It is grossly misleading in terms of what sexuality should or shouldn't be.
Yeah. It's a distortion.
It's designed to hook the younger market so that they have a customer for life.
Right.
It is completely spiritual.
Yeah.
From a negative perspective, and we know this to be the case deeply and profoundly. And when we look at our beloved country and we look at the horrific figures mm-hmm. of femicide and domestic violence and gender-based violence, there is no doubt that this is the driver.
It's linked inextricably to that.
When you look at a company perspective, the highest usage of pornography happens mm-hmm. between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m.
Really? During the working day?
During the working day. Yeah. If we start looking at the kind of CCMA actions that are mm-hmm. coming up, they're starting to quote about 60% involve some element of abuse of the computer systems and IT that's available.
Wow.
Marriages are talking about 66% of marriages quote pornography and the sexualization that comes from that as one of the causes and contributing factors. Mm. So when we start really, like, pardon the pun, stripping it down to like it really is and not saying, well, it's heightening my sexuality or process behind it, the erectile dysfunction that happens mm-hmm. from that and the inferiority that happens from it
and the inability shame,
to it impacts memory.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And, of course, it breeds shame.
Right.
The deep, captivating shame that is uneasy. I mean, it's not easy to shed that and to break that and to move away from that into a position of wholeness.
Yes.
Yeah. Because the boys are sharing porn.
Yeah.
Yeah. The school kids are sharing porn.
Yeah, almost proudly.
Yeah. It's like, hey, guys, happy Friday.
Have you seen this one?
Huh? Yeah. And it's like, you know, actually, that is demeaning.
Yeah.
It's demeaning to a child of the Most High God. It's demeaning to families. Mm. And it is a curse into our society, into our community.
Right.
And it's the thing perhaps that way outranks the substance abuse.
Right. In terms of the destructive capacity of it.
Correct. And in terms of volume.
Well, volume, and totally. Volume. I mean, you were saying at some schools there's 100%. You asked the question of 60 matric boys and every one of them put up their hands. You know, I mean, that's 100%. That's not
100%.
It's utterly destructive.
Substance abuse doesn't come close.
No, absolutely.
You know? And so the reality is you're seeing this flood into treatment centers and very few have got a specialized program structure around
it. Right.
So like how do you get out?
Yeah.
What do you do? Who do you speak to?
Yeah.
How do you go to your parents and say, Dad, like, you know, everybody's doing it, but like, I don't like myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm looking around, walking around and seeing women at every like till and
process and undressing
and
gym them
and undressing with my eyes. And actually that's not the reality. Yeah. The reality is actually if my heart is good and clean and process around it, because I don't have to bounce my eyes to look away. I can be healed and restored and live a full life. It's a huge thing.
But Conrad, talk about the impact. You were saying prior to us discussing here that they've examined healthy brain, heroin brain and porn-addled brain. And the porn-addled brain was almost worse than the heroin brain, you said.
Yeah. In looking at spec scans, and this kind of information is really available. So if you're watching porn, go look at the other side, do some research. Yeah?
Yes.
So if you look at a spec scan of a normal brain, you can see obviously the healthy blood flow and the challenge where the blood flow is there.
Yes.
When you look at somebody using heroin,
yes,
you can see where the impact has been very clearly earmarked within the brain. If you look at those two in comparison, pornography and heroin, the pornography is worse.
In what sense?
Well, if you look from a spec scan perspective, which measures the blood flow into those areas, that is what it's saying, that there's restricted blood flow.
Wow.
And it flows into the areas of emotion, executive functioning, decision making, you know, and behavior. Yeah. When you look at the detox, you know, detox from an opiate, 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
5-7 days, depending on complexities and individual cases, of course. Yes.
Yeah.
And how it's done, and it should always be done in medical supervision. When you start looking at detox from a device, that can take 3 to 6 months.
Wow.
Because the neurological pathways are so deeply
entrenched.
And we know biologically it takes 3 to 6 months to restore those neurological pathways.
Right.
So the reality is that the damage is profound.
Mm-hmm.
It impacts relationships.
Yeah.
Family relationships, male on male.
Yeah.
You know, female on female in terms of like family dynamics.
Father, daughter, father, son.
Father, daughter, father, son. So sister, sister, mother, sister, you know, those kind of things, mother, daughter, all of those relationships really get impacted in a significant kind of way. And nobody can put their finger on it.
Right.
You know, why is it? Because it's done in secrecy. It's done in the bathroom. It's done on the way to work. It's done at work. It's done within those kind of areas.
Yeah.
It's not putting on the family television necessarily and watching as a family.
Sure.
So in that kind of way, it's empowered in darkness, in secrecy, in shame.
Yeah.
So those guys, to put up their hand, okay, is a level of desperation. And I just want to honor, you know, it's foundationally, fundamentally amazing.
Are you seeing more and more men coming forward and women and saying, look, I need help with this?
It's about the normalization of breaking the stigma, Craig. Yeah, and we have to have conversations, hard conversations. Like, when did you last watch porn, bud? Yeah. Like, are you masturbating a lot? What are these kind of conversations?
Open, honest,
around
gritty,
it?
Gritty, have the conversation. Real, in confidentiality, obviously.
Yeah, there's an amazing psychologist that we work to, Mapulli. She's absolutely incredible. And she was saying, like, if we don't preach this from the pulpit, we stand the risk of becoming socially irrelevant. If we're not understanding the tax on our children, the tax on the core unit of the family and on the businesses and the process behind it, we're like way behind the times.
Just bringing it into the light.
Momentum. Bringing it into light. Claim it. The victory walk. And when we say testimonies, I mean, testimonies not necessarily about all the damage and the horrific stories that happened, and we could go on for days in my life story going on about that. But it was bad. I couldn't. He did. But the reality is that if we don't bring it into a normalized kind of position that we can talk about the stuff of mental health openly, we design for destruction. We will self-destruct within that same space. And with that self-destruction, those 64 people get injured.
Right. The knock-on. You talked a bit about some phenomenally transformative discussions when men get into open dialogue like this, and you've seen incredible results.
Craig, a well-run therapeutic interventionary group that doesn't create dependency on the group and facilitated by somebody who has been taught well how to facilitate groups is an amazingly healing orientated space. And we see it, I mean, when we train groups and we run on that, and there's training available like on the portal, but when you train groups and you like understand and you demonstrate it and you're sitting in a group of people that you don't know and you start talking and where was your point of pain? What happened at that point in your life? And you're just having a conversation. People want to talk about it if we make it okay.
Yeah.
If we make a safe place to be able to do it. How do we actually make that okay? So we see in those circles, I can't even begin to tell you how incredible it is.
Yeah.
You know, people that have been caught, that the woman like would be standing up and saying, I haven't been able to say this for 23 years. Fantastic. I've lost my voice. Because that's what happens with pornography and sexual abuse. The spouse loses their voice. They don't have authority.
Yes.
You know? So where's that authority going to be acted out in the workplace, in the environment, et cetera, with the kids and so on. So the one situation just jumps to mind, and she took like, I want to say this, and she couldn't speak it out, And when it broke out of her, I mean, not only did it radically change the husband, who was the one that was doing the watching of pornography, but it changed the whole group.
So she had to speak out about her husband being addicted to porn.
She was like, I have been captivated in this space and held bondage in that for like, and so obviously I put in one word and she's put like desperation.
Sure.
And the next time it's like, what do you want to be known about? And it's like purity.
Amazing.
And it's like, how do you do that transition? Yeah. And you've got to pierce that.
Yes.
But it's not the facilitator's job to do. Yes. It's just to facilitate and to be able to create an environment, the countenance.
Fantastic.
And the spiritual like safety and integrity of the group to be able to like have this. It's not like the confrontational like stuff. Hey, come on, tell us.
Safe space.
That's like yesteryear plus 100 or so. But really, it's the reality of like creating that safe space.
Yeah.
So you look at leaders, corporate leaders, church leaders. Where is their safe space?
Yeah.
Because now I want to bring it up and say, hey, I've got a mental health problem, I've got a mental health challenge, of which all of these are. Who do they go to without their reputation being impacted, where they haven't got a safe space, where they haven't got their colleagues really standing in that gap, that they may lose their income, their job, their social standing, et cetera.
Plus they're expected to be strong and pure and together.
So the community as a whole is damaged.
Yeah. Yeah, the system, the ecosystem is leading
us. Correct.
So, Conrad, I mean, we need to get to the point of, what is the journey to wholeness? We talked a bit about the journey to mental health issues, brokenness, addiction, using all these things. I mean, and that's childhood trauma, and it's a whole range of and it's the broader ecosystem. And you mentioned South Africa too, I mean, it's I think most South Africans to some degree have an element of PTSD, So we talk about the journey to get to that point. You talk about the different ways in which people do this, and it's a brokenness, and the fact that they can't. And we also talked about the vision, of wholeness and freedom. What is the journey? It's not a simple one. It's not an easy one. What is the journey from brokenness and addiction to wholeness and freedom?
Sure. I think first, Craig, I'd like to say that whatever is working for you, let it work for you. So not being negative or derogatory to any kind of system or to process individual approach or spiritual approach. But I think there's many routes into that kind of area. And often we speak about denial and the captivation of denial and break the denial. I think somebody who's caught in that space deep down knows the truth within themselves, right, that there's a problem.
Right.
And it's that ability to bring that out in an environment that is conducive to healing and support,
yes,
as opposed to judgment, condemnation, and like control. And I think that's a critical kind of component. There's also an important part that where somebody, the mother or the wife or the father, husband, brother, sister is using in that kind of area, and we can't get them into help. They are, and the family is unable to get them to help, but the family themselves need help. And that's critical.
Yes.
So there has to be a recovery journey and healing journey within the family. The family who's been damaged or impacted for 23 years in that particular case, or 3 years, they all dance a dance. They all have a level of codependency. They all have their trauma and their process behind it. So that recovery journey needs to be initiated. And often the focus is just on the guy that's caught up in the addiction. And we're negating actually the other two.
The impact that
it
had on the.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. And so what do those family members, loved ones need to do? Like, for instance, you mentioned the woman who was in a relationship with a man who was addicted to porn and how desperately it was affecting her.
Sure.
What advice would you give to that family member?
The family need to get into a good healing, forward-looking, resolution-orientated recovery support group structure, such as Project Exodus,
And it starts by realizing there is a problem.
I think it's not about the realization, okay?
Because the admission.
It's actually just the verbalization.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because we know it. I mean, if you go into certain cultural kind of communities, they never speak about it. We were at an amazing church a couple of weeks ago, and like they were like so on fire, and like great people, and like loving on each other, and like doing all this stuff. And the depth of going shallow was fearful and fear-based that they would not be accepted and they wouldn't be recognized. And when that gets torn open, all of a sudden, like the healing catches on and the guys find a sense of belonging actually in their vulnerability and authenticity.
Yeah.
So we have to move it into a place of authenticity. So any kind of therapeutic kind of intervention has to be moving into that space.
Yes.
Not in the realizations of you've got a problem, but let's be real.
Yeah.
You know exactly what you're doing in this environment. Mm-hmm. So let's be serious. Let's just talk the hard language and get to where we're needing to get. That's the same for the family as it is for the individual that's caught up into that space.
Yes.
So there are recovery journeys and recovery pathways. And the first thing would be like get help, like, you know, find an organizational structure that works for you and get that help.
Right.
And there's many, many of those. For us, we very much believe strongly, and when I say us, Project Exodus, we very strongly believe in a healing restorative approach, one that is not confrontational and aggressive within that kind of space, that doesn't create dependency upon the group, and defines actually your future of who you are and where you're going and what that takes.
Right.
We understand there's a pathway to healing of like getting done what needs to be done from a counseling and therapeutic point of view. But likewise, we need to teach the guys how to build strength so that they can deal with that stuff.
Right.
There's such a level of brokenness that they can't go and look at the, you know, what they did or what was done to them. And sometimes that takes years to be able to do. So for us, it's about how do we recreate vision and purpose. First and foremost, like, you know, when you're speaking to a guy using Nyorpi or Woonga, you know, just let's go down from 8 stores down to 4 stores. But start there, you know.
Baby steps.
And just take it simply. You know, how do you just get into the group structure? Get that work going, start to do it. And then there's a personal development pathway that you need to engage in.
Yes.
And it's a healing restorative journey. It's about understanding that there's social intelligence that's involved and triggers and warning signs and how to plan well and how to restore well and how to actually understand, you know, the consequences of my actions, but also to work very importantly in that 90% of the behavior disorder that sustains the pain.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Forgiveness is, of course, critical. We know that from a spiritual perspective that if I don't forgive myself and forgive others, that the ability to actually get into a space of healing is difficult to attain.
Right.
And we start then just doing the cycle of addiction and the cycle of like using again and again, the cycle of pain. Yeah. And that becomes a never-ending process. So, yeah, I mean, my encouragement would be absolutely like, you know, get online, check help. There's We're blessed to be able to support multiple churches, 110 groups or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of resource, free resource and otherwise on the website to be able to get into.
Well, what is that website? Journey.
ProjectExodus.net.
.net. Fantastic.
But more importantly, like, get in touch. Get in touch.
Reach out. Can that starting point, even if you don't have a professional counselor or program, just talk to somebody, get it out, share, find a trusted friend and just share. Because I mean, bringing it into is the starting point.
Tear it open.
Conrad, I mean, we could talk for hours and I think we will talk again.
Sure.
But this is powerful. It's beautiful. I mean, the ultimate reality is that we were made to be free and whole and a gift to the world.
Correct.
And addiction destroys that. It robs that, you know. Correct. Yeah. What is a script? The thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy.
That's it.
That's it. These things steal, kill, and destroy. Yeah. And we need to break free, to be everything we can to each other and to ourselves. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time and conversation.
It's a pleasure. Awesome. It's been great. I'm really excited to have been here. And I look forward to catching up again.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Cheers.